Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
He's an American icon who fought in World War II, gave you Martin and Lewis, Martha Ray, George Gobel, Tennessee Ernie Ford, Andy Williams, Fried Green Tomatoes, Spinal Tap, The Princess Bride, The Sure Thing, Stand By Me, The Declaration of Independence, People for the American Way, and a few TV shows.
Maybe you've heard of a couple of these.
Family, Sanford and Son, Maude, Good Times, The Jeffersons, Hot L, Baltimore, One Day at a Time, Mary Harmon, Mary Harmon, The Dumplings, All's Fair, All the Glitters, Fernwood Tonight, America Tonight, Different Strokes, The Facts of Life, The Baxters, Archie Bunker's Place, Silver Spoons, Gloria, Square Pegs, a.k.a. Pablo, Who's the Boss, 227, Sunday Dinner, The Powers That Be, 704, Hauser, Channel Umpteen and 3, One Day at a Time on Netflix.
All of the above with Norman Lear. It's all of the above with Norman Lear. No matter what you do, you know that Norman Lear is just another version of you.
This is Norman Lear, who does short little blips all the time. And we're doing a short little blip to start a show. This is Paul Hipp, my hipster, my great friend and ally here.
Hello, Norman.
On what the hell is the name of this thing?
All of the above.
All of the above. All of the above. And, my God, I think I see them entering now. We got some great guests today.
Our guests, yeah. Tell them who our guests are today.
Our guests are...
The Motas.
The Motas. Yeah. Mauricio and Katie Mota, who are... My God, I think she's one of the most beautiful women I've seen ever. I love her look.
Yeah.
And he is one of the smartest, most decent, and talented men I've ever met. Mauricio Mota, and they're coming in with a great friend and also one of the most I'm crazy about, Dean Ernest Wilson, Dean of the East, stepping down shortly from the Annenberg School at the University of Southern California.
Wow, this is a good
and
show.
And here they come now.
Have you heard about the new Podcast One app? There is no other podcast app like this. Download the all-new Podcast One app now in the App Store or on Google Play now. You can find out everything about your favorite shows and get more content, all of the above. Find articles, social media episodes, even make playlists. It's easy to comment and connect with other show fans, too. We have our own little community on there. You can share your favorite content and see behind-the-scenes photos. Plus, get a 360 view or watch a bunch of shows in virtual reality. There's over 1,000 videos on there right now. It's like you're in the studio. The new Podcast One app looks so cool and has so many things you can do, including fun things like rewards for listening. So what are you waiting for? Download the new Podcast One app in the App Store or on Google Play now.
This is All of the Above with Norman Lear.
Katie, my beautiful Katie, you're the only, only girl that I adore. But when the moon shines over the cacao shed, I'll be waiting for you at the kitchen door.
I thought it was going to be
kitchen. It should have been kitchen door.
Oh, my goodness. This is ridiculous.
How's that, Katie, for an introduction?
Good serenade. She went, and you have to be over 12 to know that song.
I know the song. But
oh, you did know the song.
I've never gotten quite that intro before.
No.
And with any luck, this may be the last version. It's that bad.
I want to know what Mauricio and Katie are up to yesterday. What did you do yesterday?
What did you do yesterday?
You're working on a film. What you do.
Yeah. Do you want to start?
Yeah, we're working on doing East Los High, the movie. Which is basically like a finale to the four seasons of the TV show that we've done on Hulu.
Do you, audience, know East Los Angeles High? East LA High is the title.
East Los High,
East Los High. Yeah. And it's been on for 4 years.
Correct.
It's just amazing how much is out there that one cannot get to because one can't get to everything.
And I think that that show may have been the most popular on Hulu of all of its shows. Is that right? For a certain period of time?
For a period of time, and now you know, they launched a new Originals. Handmaid's Tale became a huge
hit. Handmaid's Tale, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we have been like a huge success on Hulu Latino, but also as part of the big effort of Hulu to make Originals. So and we're the longest running drama.
Yeah, we were one of the first Originals. So we were coming out the year that House of Cards, you know, it was really the forefront when everyone's like, why are you going to streaming? What are you doing on Hulu? And we're like, this is where
it's going to be at.
Exactly. And of course, 4 years later, it's like, of course. But then it was not the obvious choice for where to put a program.
Right. Now, Hulu, how many shows has Hulu got? Netflix is the leader in this arena.
Yeah, Hulu. Right now. Hulu is a very interesting platform because Hulu not only has its originals, but also has content from the other networks because they are owned by the four big studios.
Uh-huh.
And they have also deals with big distributors. But Hulu has been very consistent on doing a lot of originals. And better now? You guys want me to answer that again?
No, they're just gone. They're giving me a signal.
Okay. You want me to answer that again?
Or no, go ahead. It's fine.
So, they've been doing an amazing effort. We were the first TV show, like, in American history that all Latino cast is speaking in English. And Hulu was a pioneer to believe in us and having this all cast, all protagonists, positive vision of this. We call them New Americans because they're as Americans as
I love that, but there's one fault I find with it.
I know.
25 years ago, I did something called, we did something called AKA Pablo with Paul Rodriguez, which was a Mexican-American family. I remember telling, this was on ABC when there were only three or four networks, and I remember telling the network that this was about the immigrant experience. I'm old enough, I said at the time, I'm still old enough. I'm old enough to remember when the Jews came here, when the Italians came here, when the Polish came, when the Irish came. They settled in areas where they were up the street, down the street, across the street from each other. The Irish in Hartford, I lived in Hartford, Connecticut, and the Italians and Jews and so forth. And that I always thought of that as the immigrant experience. And the new one at this time, all those years ago, was the Latino, the Mexican-American experience, I thought. Mm-hmm. So there will be 17 members of the cast, as it was written, and it's going to take some weeks to get used to that amount of people in a half-hour situation comedy. This was a comedy in front of a live audience. And, the network said, yeah, they understood. But they aced it. I think we were going to get there. I think we were on our way to doing a good show. But they aced it after six or seven episodes. You guys have been on the air for 4 years. Hmm. That is fabulous.
Yeah, I lost all my hair through the process. But it was amazing. I think that for us was... I love that you brought that story, Norman, from your trajectory, like going through that path of doing that. I think that for us, because we had to do it outside of the system, I think that if we did it in the traditional way, we probably wouldn't have the show aired. We had to do it outside of Hollywood, raise the money through donations and grants, which was Katie's work, and then we had to shoot. We shot 24 half hours episodes with no buyers guaranteed. We did it ourselves, and
I didn't know that part of this.
Yeah,
that's
because
fabulous.
Because we knew there was an audience, because we are both research buffs. We have an R&D team in our company, and we designed this thinking about this audience. We knew that they were tired of being seen as gang members, hookers. They were ready to be characters seen as CEOs, directors, teachers, and all that. So we knew that we had something there. We had a lot of doors in our faces, a lot of people saying that. We have emails of people saying that we went to big agencies, big production companies, big buyers saying the U.S. market is not ready for Latinos speaking in English as protagonists. You guys are crazy.
They said that?
Yeah. We have emails saying that. And it's like
a lot of requests for diversity. So, like, it wasn't okay to have a predominantly Latino cast. If it was going to be Latino needed to be mixed, so you needed to have, you know, Latino, Black, Asian, White. Like, it couldn't be only that.
Yeah, we needed to do, like, Captain Planet. So, and we didn't want to do Captain Planet. And because the feedback was always like that, we decided to go for it. And we shot 24 half hours, plus 10 hours of social media content, and we got multiple offers. We went to Hulu, because they had a lot of syndicated content into that arena. They knew there was a demand for that. They knew there was an opportunity for that. And then I remember being on a meeting, and then the guy who was there just like, wow, this is, he just saw a sizzle reel. And then he was like, oh, this is amazing. Like, when are you guys going to start shooting? And I had a duffel bag. I got the duffel bag. I said, here it is, 12 DVDs with two episodes each. And in a week, they made an offer. We put it on Hulu, and I think 1 month later, they were saying the Hollywood Reporter that we beat Grey's Anatomy on Hulu. So it's, and it started that way because we knew the audience was there, and we had to believe in our guts. And Katie did an amazing job designing the whole show and the whole team behind it. So,
hey, you're also a couple, aren't you?
We are.
You are.
We are.
So I want, because we're on a podcast and they're not looking at you.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a mixed race couple here.
Exactly.
And I don't think we don't allow that on this podcast. Do we?
You need a special pass or something.
How long have you been together?
We've been married 5 years.
Yeah. We met through the show.
You came together through the show.
Yeah, Katie had the idea of doing the show, and she invited me to help her being part of the team, and then now it's this beautiful nepotism, like, relationship, husband and wife, running a company. And
how do you guys know our other guest, Dean Ernest Wilson?
You want to tell that story?
No, you tell it much better than
no,
I
you
do.
Tell it much better than
we
I do. Go to
heard
Rio.
From you or any
yeah,
talent.
Well, we... there was a team of us that went from the University of Southern California down to Rio.
Okay, that's enough.
Working hard, of course.
Right. And so we had these serious conversations with really leading people in Brazil at the time, and Mauricio was one of them. And so we started scheming about this and started scheming about that, and the next thing I know, we were out at this really hip nightclub. Until about, I shouldn't maybe say this in front of Katie, but I'm sure she knows
okay.
you. She knows you better,
go,
right?
And she loves to go to nightclubs in Rio and samba places. So.
Right. So we we went to this club till 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was great music and samba and so forth. And we really hit it off because he was a big thinker. And he wasn't just thinking about Rio, and he wasn't just thinking about television. He was thinking about taking over the whole world. And trying new experiments, and how do you bring together progressive content that would reach important folks and also have fun doing it and telling a great story. And so we hit it off. He moved to L.A., and we kept this long conversation going.
Yep.
And we have him on a couple of advisory boards. He's working hard. We've given him, he and Katie, a diversity award.
And this started before... the show went on. Pardon me. The show went on.
Yeah, it was sort of like parallel to it because, funny enough, going full circle with Annenberg, one of the people that the person who introduced us was Henry Jenkins, who is a big scholar, part of the Annenberg team, and the model that Katie created with Islos High to make it not only a TV show but a multi-platform show was inspiring to Henry's work, right, Katie? I think it would be great for you too.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'd been working internationally before. And just looking at the future of content and how people are consuming it and how do you create worlds that people really get into when, we have so much happening. How do you create stuff that really stands out and also goes into someone's world and they can enter the world themselves? And so I came across, Henry Jenkins' book when I was doing my master's work and then met him and was really fascinated about how he was looking at kind of cross-platform storytelling and really not just like, oh, we're going to throw up the same thing, just like recut it up and put the same thing here, but actually really looking at expansive storytelling and how do we use the best of our platforms in order to reach people in new and different ways. And also, I think creatively it's so exciting because you're so, in television, which I love, but it's a cadence, right? Like you got to hit certain things at a certain time and to make it work. But when you talk about short form and you're adding that on, you can do different things with the characters. You can explore different facets. You can get into different issues, and you can do really, I think, unique things. So it now didn't need to be an either or. You could really kind of create these really interesting, interconnected, complex worlds.
And where did you do your master's? At USC?
At the New School in New York City.
In New York City.
Kind of, one of the things that fascinated me about the work that they were doing, they wanted to do, is that they use the online media in a very different way. So if you're interested in East Los High, which has all these fabulous kids and fashion and music and dance, so you could go to the website and click and download information and views on new Latino music, et cetera, et cetera. But they also had a place where you could click and learn about education. You could learn about health care. And how do you eat right? And how do you, you know, protect yourself against sexually transmitted diseases? And that was such a cool combination of stuff that was fun, as well as stuff that was going to be helpful to the people watching it.
No, that's great. That's good, and that still that continues.
That continues,
and in that sense, East Los High will have a continued life.
Yeah, right now we are in this moment where we're doing the like the movie as a finale, and we're planning to keep expanding the world of the show because, like Ernie said, we created so many extensions of the show. So, for example, we had one of the main characters, Ceci, she gets pregnant, and we created a whole vlog online about her explaining the experience of being pregnant to her cousin who lives in Mexico. It's like a show inside the show. So we have all these mini spin-offs happening in parallel of the show that we plan to explore. So we created like a love and sex consultancy column with a character that gives advice about LGBTQ sex. He also talks about abortion. He also talks about women's rights.
And all the questions come
from
kids.
I know a character on a current television show that's going to look into that. Elena on One Day at a Time. We'll be talking about that. You know, we're doing One Day at a Time, which is
yes.
Cuban American.
And
family.
Congratulations on being renewed, by the way.
Thank you.
Is this
you.
In season
but
two?
I think
in season two.
Yeah.
So this is a scoop.
As we sit here, there's a longer table full of writers on the Sony lot, and they are thinking about all of this now. But the character Elena, who is 15, is perfect for seeking information of this kind on East Los High.
I'd love to see the call where the writers call the business affairs and say, can we have a character go to EastLosHigh.com? It's a show on Hulu. I would love to see that happening. I love that. It's a great idea.
I will bet that can happen.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I love it, too, for the same reason you
I learned not to ever challenge you, Norman. You're always 10 hours ahead of all of us. So, and you make it happen.
That's the way it wants to be, isn't it?
Yeah, and can I add something to that? I think that one of the things, Norman, that we loved when we met you for the first time, again, introduced by Jonathan Tapling and Ernie from Annenberg, is that you really inspired us because one of the big problems that I have nowadays is that people like to say, oh, we need to do more civic media. Every media is civic. We need to think media as something that has a civic role, whatever you're doing. And I think that for us, when we started doing East Los High, you were a big inspiration because, okay, how we can doing the positive impact but also creating these layers of stories that we can use different media to make social impact but also have a cultural conversation and have people talking about sex or like how identity works in like with teenagers and all that. So for us, East Los High became that framework, that like proof of concept that you can do entertaining content that develops a new audience that was completely being neglected in the U.S., but also you can give them a voice, but at the same time make real social impact. Mm-hmm. And the results are crazy. The results that we have, like we have the American Health Society, like the American Public Health Society, showing that East Los High was huge on the impact of teen pregnancies nationally because kids were watching the show, going to the website, using the services and all that. So I think that it's an interesting moment to use traditional media, new media to make like concrete change. So
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the basis for the inspiration, I mean, it's your work. I think, you know, you did it first, which was always like, you know, it's kind of like everything's just an evolution of that. And then you looked at, I remember looking historically back and being like, okay, when was the last time, you know, we've seen a few, but an abortion was done on television, right? And really until the last 5 years, zero other than your show. Which is...
It's amazing.
Right? In 40 years, not one abortion. 33% of women have abortions.
Maud, and then 40 years.
40 years. Yeah. Yeah. And then now we've seen, like, I think, 3 or 4, including our show. But it's, you know, how is that possible when such a large part of the population is, in fact, facing and dealing with it?
Did you say 30%?
33% by the age of 35 have had at least one abortion.
My goodness. I totally unaware of that statistic. Isn't it amazing? You can't deal with it, or they won't allow you to deal with it, or what is the reason for that?
Can I ask a question? I mean,
can I answer that question?
Absolutely. It's the mind meld thing going on here. It's the mind meld thing. It's
telepathy. You know, what just occurs to me, you're the dean, former dean. Are you just
Come on, Norman. I'm still the dean.
You're still the dean.
I got a month and a half. Don't drive me off.
You know. And I just noticed you're a black man.
Oh, come on, here again. For much of my life, I have been a black man.
You have?
I have. In fact, this is what we call in the movie industry and the entertainment industry a reveal.
Where was that word used politically? No, just in the last day or something.
Reveal?
Yes.
But I want to ask the question of because this sounds so easy and automatic. I mean, you guys come in, you do these 4 episodes. It's got, you know, Latinos in the writing room. And Norman did this great series of shows. But it's not that easy, is it? I mean, because if it were easier, then Norman would have had 50 competitors when he did this years ago. And you guys would have had 100 competitors. And with all due respect, I think both of y'all are kind of weird. I mean, this shit. Can I say that? This stuff happened.
You're a black man. You can.
I can say anything. Well, now that we
use that card, my friend.
Absolutely. You're gonna regret that. I got a contract I'm working on.
You can say anything.
Absolutely. But I mean, how did this happen? I mean, the two of you, these two efforts shouldn't have happened.
Well, it shouldn't have been so. So much of an, I mean, what shouldn't be is your opportunity to discuss it in the context you're discussing it. There should have been far more. There should be far more now.
Right.
I don't know. I love the title of my bumper sticker. Just another version.
Just another.
Of you. And we sit around here, versions of one another.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that the ultimate fact?
It is.
We are versions of one another.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
How do we make a problem of that?
Yeah, but I think we see it that way. All of us. That's why we're at this table. I think effort is a good word. But I think that, and it's a tough process. It's not easy because people think it's easy. We know for a fact because we have access to data and we talk to our fans all the time. Like it's a national fan base, a global fan base, there's space for 4 more East Los Highs. We should have 4 competing shows with East Los High. But it's sort of like checks the boxes. Oh, there's a Latino show here. It's cool. So we keep – it's because, but at the same time, it's very hard to make shows the way we do because it's multi-layered. It's much more complex. It involves research. It involves knowing what you don't know because you have to be humble because we live in a bubble in Hollywood. So we need to be able, right, Katie? That's why we do a lot of research to really tap into that. And the inception of East Los High was very hard because we had to prove by doing that we were right. Right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think it's a hard process. I think it's in terms of, like, you just have to want to write and rewrite, actually. I think that's the biggest thing. So there's no quick way to get, like, into those kind of depths of character and depths of issues and their complexities, right? You're not just going to sit down and write that script. You probably need to write it and write it again and think about it and do it again. Mm. And so I think, you know, we live in a world where we want to turn things out quickly. We want them to get big ratings. And – it's not always about like the art of creating things and kind of really exploring everything. And I think that makes it hard. I think there's the monetary system. I think there's things that, you know, doing things that are different, period, I think for all humans is challenging. But I also think in particular in Hollywood, they want to have something to point to. Well, this happened. This was hugely successful. It's been done. So let's do it again. And we get into the lemming syndrome. And so we just kind of see, that's why we see the same shit over and over again and over again. But we're not seeing things that are more and more reflective of the world around us. And I think that that is a really big challenge, because I think there's people who want to create it, actually. But I don't know that the whole system has necessarily caught up. I think it is. I think it's shifting.
Yeah, but that's, you know, Stacey Smith, who, Norman, you know, and yes. Actually, I think everybody around the table knows.
We know her really well.
She does this amazing.
Oh, you know Stacey Smith.
Well, then you're just out of it.
I'm going to leave the room for a minute. I'm going to the table.
But tell Paul who.
So what she does is she's a professor at the Annenberg School at USC. And every year she looks at the top 100 grossing films that have come out that year. And she has a whole team of students who work with her to identify each character, how many words do they say, what's their gender, what's their race, how are they dressed, what's their style. And she adds that up and she compares it. And if you look over the last 30 years, which she has gone back to look at this, at some level, it has not changed at all. There's still minuscule numbers of women who are producers and directors, minuscule numbers of people of color who are actors or directors. There's been this blip in the last, three or four or five years, but for those who remember the bad old days, maybe that's just a blip. Hmm. And maybe this is like the blaxploitation films. They were there for 2 years and they went away. And, you know, Katie, you sort of touched on that a little bit where you were saying, is this a one-off opportunity? Is it, Bill, are you more hopeful now than what was happening?
I try to be hopeful. I mean, the biggest thing for me is we just got to, you know, kind of put our heads down and do the work and find like-minded people ultimately, because you need people who want to greenlight this stuff. You need people who want to be a part of it, that want to do the work to make it happen, that want to break new people in, right? Because that takes time. I mean, the reality is breaking in anyone new into anything, whether it's an actor, a producer, a writer, a director, it takes a few years of just doing the work. I don't think there's any shortcut to learning production and really doing this stuff other than doing it itself. So I think there's this weird thing where it's like, we want this instant change, but we really need to look at the whole system. And that is going to take some time to really groom and change it, and commitment from people to say, this will pay off and it's going to be better, even though it's not, this person is less well known. But a lot of people want the well-known person, and that means a lot of repeat, you know, decisions.
Am I naive in thinking that you can, that it can come from somebody in the middle of the country, somebody in Chicago, somebody with a camera and a YouTube account and a Vimeo account, and that they could put a show on and follow in your wake with a show similar?
I mean, it's happening. I think, you know, you certainly saw Insecure. Issa Rae had done, you know, Diaries of an Awkward Black Girl. Mm-hmm. YouTube, you know, super funny, brilliant. And she now has an HBO show that is incredible, right? I think we are seeing unique examples of that. I think that's probably more the exception than the rule, but I think it's like, it's another way to get exposure, right? Like it's one less barrier perhaps, but I still think that there's a lot of the traditional barriers that exist. Yeah.
I've heard about that show just now for the first time. What is that show again?
Insecure on HBO. It's Issa Rae, and she had a
the black girl was in the title.
Yeah, she started on YouTube.
She started on YouTube.
Awkward Black Girl was the title
of her YouTube series. And then when HBO picked it up, I mean, it's a different style show, but still her voice, still her character, very much.
Authentic.
And
can I find the original on YouTube?
Yeah. You can. And she's excellent, hysterical, funny, you know. And so that's, you know, I think that's one of those stories where like, yes, this is working, this is changing, put your voice out there, practice, and then you can, you know, it's going to...
That's fabulous. There is that door.
Yeah.
But among the doors, are they open to this kind of innovation and interracial efforts, and I mean, ignoring the race barrier?
I think yes and no. I think that both Ernie and Katie said important things, which is like, we have this interesting mentality in Hollywood and also in Silicon Valley, which is like, oh, this is working well, right? So let's repeat. But I still think that we have more of like, oh, this is working well, let's keep it here, but let's not make more of that. So that's why I agree with Katie said about we need to have a bigger shift on the ecosystem, because the gatekeepers haven't changed their mindsets. We have a very problematic supply chain where we keep hiring the same people. We're not creating. Who is the Latino Tom Cruise? Who is the African American Tom Cruise? Who is the Asian Tom Cruise? Who is the Asian Scarlett Johansson? Who is the Latino? Because we are coming from, we're still in the mentality of buying audiences instead of developing audiences. Mm-hmm. We have all these untapped audiences that haven't seen themselves on screen, they haven't seen their stories on screen, and so this is like a, I like to call this, we have this obsession in media with finding the unicorn, right? Every time, if you Google finding the unicorn, everybody talks about that all the time, but nobody wants to take the effort of investing in research and development to find these unicorns. But every year we have this beautiful Acme factory of dyed donkeys with plastic swords in their foreheads pretending to be unicorns. Because, oh no, let's pretend this is a unicorn. We're going to paint it white. We're going to get a plastic sword, put on the forehead, and it's going to look like a unicorn. But it's a show generally portraying people of color in a different way. You have the writer's room don't have enough people of color writing them, so that's why you have these stereotypes. So I think that everybody wants it on paper. I think that Stacey's effort shows that the research is there, guys. She keeps doing the research, and nobody's going to do action about it. We do the action. You, Norman, do the action. But again, we are two companies. We need to normalize the other thing about we're just a version of the others. What's the bumper sticker you said?
Just another version of you.
Yeah, we need to normalize other stories, because we have a huge responsibility in media, because if we do that, we're going to solve a lot of problems if we have more people that are not the typical people seeing television. So I think that there is a artificial ask for new stories and new voices and all that, but I still feel that it sounds to me a lot of CSR, like a CSR program or PR.
So. Well, it's a lot of limited slots. That's what we've heard. Oh, we've got our Latino show or our Black show. Would you ever hear we've got our White show?
I mean, they say that we've got Latino show.
We love your show, but we already have we're developing two Black shows.
They say more carefully than that, right? Or this is like once removed. They're not going to say that probably on a press interview. but it's said, or it's implied. It's like, we've got X, right? And then that show happens to be their only Black or Latino show. And you're like, well, okay, first of all, why can we understand there are 500 different types of white experiences, right? Millions. But we cannot understand that for every other race. It exists for everyone of every gender, of every race. There's a multitude of stories. And I think that's the thing that is the most frustrating and upsetting, is because it still is kind of put it into this limited purview of what that means to have diverse content instead of having diversity within the diversity.
And it seems like willful on their part, because you've had a success on Hulu. So you could do more. I mean, if you want to, this is the one thing where they won't do more and more and more, right? I mean, you've had a success.
Yeah, but this success was the point of reference Katie was referring to. They can say, well, we've had, you know, LA High. Yeah.
And even with the successes, you also hear, oh, my goodness, we did this show, and then ... it did really well. It did a big audience. It sold a lot
like
of advertising.
It's a big surprise. It's a huge,
who knew? Boom, 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 2 months later, same show comes out, similar show. Oh, my goodness, what a surprise. We didn't know. 3 months later. So there is this kind of willful racism.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an accident.
All of the Above with Norman Lear.
There's something about TrueCar a lot of people don't know. Using TrueCar can also help you buy a used car. In fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Whether you're looking to buy new or used, you can get upfront pricing information that empowers discounts off the list price for used cars and a better buying experience through our TrueCar certified dealer network. There are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. You'll see what other people paid for the car you want so you can know what a fair price is and feel confident. With TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing so you can enjoy a quick, easy buying experience. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the new or used car you want. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Hey, have you heard? Podcast One has a whole bunch of awesome new shows filled with big names that are waiting for you on our brand new amazing app. This one's a game changer. There's Norman Lear talking to Amy Poehler, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Charles Barkley. Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with Bryan Cranston, Josh Gad, and soon Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
OC Real Housewife Heather Dubrow's World. Lady Gang's Three Mimosa Podcast with Leah Michelle, Nelly Furtado, Elle King, and more. Plus every episode of The Adam Carolla Show, Dan Patrick, and Rich Eisen. And if you like what happens in the ring, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chael Sonnen, and a whole bunch more. So download our one-of-a-kind new app and see for yourself. Go to the App Store, Google Play, or download it now at podcastone.com. Now back to All of the Above with Norman Lear.
How can the people listening to us help the situation? Because I would bet that 98.10%, which brings it close to 99%, of everybody would wish to. You know, it isn't like
but
the listeners and the viewers are sitting around hoping everything gets all white again. You know, they're enjoying what they see that's mixed and that's Latino.
Let's push it a little bit. Is that we just had a recent election, as you and I have talked about, Norman, on many occasions. And so let's pose that in the context of the recent election so that there are some folks at the far extreme who would sort of like to keep the screens of various sizes white. And they're not rushing in to see all the issues. Now, that's probably a minority, would be my hope.
But when confronted, and I don't mean that in a antagonistic way, but when I would doubt how many people would say, no, I'm not interested in Latino or black.
But if they're voting with their feet in their pocketbook, I think the question is, will they get up out of their seat at home and go see a movie about East Los High? Maybe they will. I mean, what's the film, Get Out?
Get Out. My
that just
God,
came out.
Have you seen Mauricio?
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant.
It's brilliant.
I'm near breathless thinking about it.
It's a movie that people will talk in cinema schools in 20 keep talking for the next 30 years as a masterpiece.
Absolutely.
But that, again, that's an example of, oh my goodness, it did so well.
Yeah, but now it's
it may be, and this is to Katie's point, maybe we actually are reaching this tipping point where, Norman, to your point, folks really do want to get up and see movies that either reflect themselves or reflect a part of the world that they are just interested in. Or it's just a good story. They don't care what part of the world is as long as it's a good story.
I think rich and complex characters and stories, I mean, that's it. I mean, honestly, I think that the rest, people will tune in if it's a good story with rich characters. But I think sometimes what happens is we limit our characters by the stereotypes that exist. And so we've already, in essence, hurt or damaged, and that's why you need diverse writers, right? Because they're not going to do that. But when you don't have the diversity in the writer's room, I think you see a lot of the same kind of stereotypical mistakes done again and again, and we've limited the possibility of success, perhaps, because you're still not creating a dimensional character and story. And so I think as we start to see the shift of creators and directors and writers become more diverse, they're going to tell their stories. They're going to tell what they know, and none of that is flat. None of that is simple or stereotypical. And so I think that's where you start to see this content, you know, like Get Out, like Insecure, like East Los High, that has been, you know, just really interesting, great content. And yes, they are, you know, different races, So I think that's exciting.
Yeah, I think bringing the election is important here, because I think that you said something important about voting and watching. They seem very different behaviors, but I think that a lot of people have been talking a lot about the whole like demographic anxiety, about how white people, which still consider the majority, right? Mm-hmm. Like, are feeling threatened by people of color, and it's the job conversation. It's the everything. It's a term called demographic anxiety. Like, we heard about it for the first time through the Ford Foundation. But if people that are not of color were watching other layers of people of color more, they would probably be feeling less anxiety, yes, because they would be like, oh, we're just a version of the other. And I think that there is a huge responsibility, because we keep talking about the news media responsibility through elections and other things, but like, we have a responsibility of content makers, at like scripted content makers, of how people see all these stereotypical versions of people of color. How, what's the impact of that for 40? Yeah. If you see Latinos being portrayed as like orange sellers,
rapists
or gang members, or uneducated, or people that go through the like the Rio Grande and all that, it's very easy to come and say they're all rapists and they're snakes, because you consume so much media and content. Right. The same thing for other layers, for Muslims, for women. And if Stacey's study showed that, like, I think that there was a sexual representation of women in movies. So it was like 70% women and men was 10%. So that has an impact of women seen as objects or women seen as dumb, because there is that common. Right. So we have a whole like cultural industry designing that kind of behavior. So voting is a consequence of that,
right,
because pop culture has a responsibility on designing their perception.
Let me say, since I'm stepping down in my official responsibility in 43 days, I'm going to say something more radical than I would have if I wasn't stepping down, which is, maybe if the entertainment industry doesn't get this right, they're really going to screw up America even more. Because to your point, Mauricio, if you grow up in the middle sections of the country or in the suburb of Los Angeles, and the only representation you see on media are bad actors, bad hombres,
as the
president says.
Yep. I'm talking to this mixed marriage couple here.
And she's actually expecting half Latino, half North
Are you expecting?
Boy. I am.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah. Exactly. So we keep blending.
We're talking about
that. Keep blending.
She's not expecting somebody to walk into the room. She's expecting a child.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
And this will be a mixed marriage child. It's we have.
Hallelujah, amen, and mazel tov. I think that I'm really glad you brought it up, because it gets back to the conversation we had, because it's all related. I think that we forgot that religion comes from the Latin word, which means religare, that means reconnecting. Religion is just a language for people to reconnect through different ways of seeing things. I grew up, I was very like fortunate, because I grew up in this amazing influence from Yoruba culture, from my mother's side, which is like African religion. And you have these gods that represent you, and one is a god of war, and then is a god of water, and then is a god of the wind. And my father was raised by this beautiful, like, African Brazilian woman named New York, who was a Baptist, who was from a Baptist church. So I grew up going to the church on Sundays and going to the Yoruba parties at night with people getting possessed by spirits. So for me, I've always seen as magic, or the Baptist choir singing, for me it's also magic, or for me it's, I've always seen as an expression of that, and how people were happy, nobody was accusing anybody of anything, there was no hate. So, and my grandmother knew that my other grandmother would be possessed by spirits, and then she never brought it up. They would talk, you know, like, so I was very blessed to grow up, and that's how we're dealing with our family, and that's how we deal with the stories that we make, where we think that that's the, we go through the core of what religion means, and that doesn't dictate the movements that we make. So
yeah, I mean, I think the core of every religion is you know, some people might hate me for saying this, but it's the same. I mean, I think the beliefs that there's at their heart are the same. And I think people get in and mess it up and decide to interpret it for their own means instead of going back to the center. I didn't grow up actually religious at all. Probably, if anything, like a little bit, you know, weary of, you know, certainly being fanatical of anything and concerned about that. You know, I grew up in Vermont, so I grew up very close to the earth on a farm. And so for me, I really was connected more than anything to, like, the seasons and kind of the what was happening in the world around me and how I could, you know, I couldn't sleep on a full moon and how really that impacted my life in such a deep way. So I felt always some kind of part of spiritualism in the sense of there's something bigger going on around us that we can't entirely explain. But I think, you know, in life, it's there's so many beautiful stories and so many incredible things happening. And I think for us, it's about sharing those stories. But then also realistically, you know, and I think at what you all are raising here is making sure we check where it goes from beautiful stories that are helpful and, you know, in guiding people's lives into fanaticism that becomes dictating other people's lives. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's really scary and, yeah, you know, causes so much, you know, just unneeded suffering and wars and everything else. And so I think it's about coming back to what we were really talking about in race. It's like it's just another version of you. When you look at religion, it's the same thing.
It's so amazing that in the name of God, the human of the species has killed one another more in the name of God than for any other reason.
Yeah, because religion has amazing symbolism. The problem is that man fucked it. With being fanatical or just like with different agendas, not only to mention, today we had Obamacare repealed, and luckily the Senate's going to be sane and is not going to accept it, but we also had a very important law approved to executive order today or yesterday, which is that churches can play in the political realm without losing their tax, like, what do you call it?
Exempt status. Yeah.
So, like, we're getting to a point where, like, it's, and not, this is not about church or state, it's like we have all these agendas which are, sorry for the white male in the room, but, like, it's the white man in the, it's coming, this agenda is coming back, which is like, guys, we're finally evolving. We're finally having a more like a balance, not even balance. We're having more like a change of the narrative, and then we got to get back because we're feeling afraid of difference. Because that's the problem. Where this fake reaction to the difference and color or background, and like we have guys being killed in Kansas because the guy in the bar thought they were Muslims, the guys were from India. So, in the name of religion,
in the name of God.
So, yes. Because we have these crusades and all that, and getting back to our work, I think that we are far behind on admitting, doing a mea culpa, an assessment of what is the role our narratives have on politics, on voting, on activism, and another example, today I was listening to NPR and all these amazing conversations, and someone is saying that we're going to have a big riot in LA in the next 5 years, saying that it's going to happen. And that freaks me out because we are in the capital, the global capital of entertainment and content, and we have this anger bubbling of people of color feeling that they are being put more on the fringes. So we're really going to have another riot, like, had another one in 1992, and what's the role we're having? We're contributing to that as media makers because it goes from what Katie said. The writer's room is not enough. The directors, the executives, the whole supply chain needs to have a contribution to that. So,
and it seems like the only place we can do it now, because news media has become so divisive. It's like we all tune into what we want to hear, right? More or less.
Yes.
And so, and then social media, I mean, look at the election too. It's like we're all just feeding ourselves, like, you know, the same stuff. So your interpretation of the world, you know, might be totally different than mine, but we think this is reality. So our idea of what is real is so distorted by, you know, kind of these algorithms and how we're all kind of dividing ourselves up. And so I feel like the only place where it's like we're just telling stories of people's lives is actually narrative content. I feel like it's probably the one space where you get to see the gray. You get to see that it's not like you're just labeled as this or that and you're not tuning into this or that, but you're actually just seeing people live out their lives, and it's like, and you can see how they're like you or not, or why things were complicated and there wasn't some simple answer or kind of dictation that we could give them in terms of this is how it should be.
And then once they're in your world, you can challenge them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or you can seduce them and show them there is like I love that you brought that up, because at a certain point with This Lost High, because we're, you know, because it's a streaming show and we access data and we have a team that calculates and sees the response of the social media, 70% of our audience was white, black, and Asian.
Hmm.
For Hollywood rules, we're a Latino show.
Yeah.
But we are more than anything, we are a high school drama with sexy, like edgy situations. And let's not forget, high school never ends. So people are watching because they're like, oh, wow, look at this high school in East LA. It's not so different than mine, but it has, they go through situations that they deal with situations different than mine. And I remember at certain point as we were researching, we had this amazing, I think it was between season 2 and 3, we had this amazing fight online. I think I told you that story. This beautiful fight online through social media between African-American women and Latina women fighting online about who loved This Lost High more.
Oh, that's great.
That is like, and that for us is the ultimate role that we have as media makers. It's about making practical empathy. It's about making empathy, not a philosophical kumbaya thing. It's just like, oh, like you said, like, okay, let's invite to the world and let's see, which really concerns me, the whole like, can I say curse?
Yeah, okay, curse your head
great. Off. Like, I fucking hate the whole coastal against Rust Belt conversation, which is like, so now we discovered the Rust Belt? now we discovered the Heartland? And then we have all these theories. We need to do more content for the Heartland. We need to do more content for blue collar. Really? We need to do more content for blue collar? I have to hear like Chris Pratt from Guardians of the Galaxy saying like, blue collars does not represent what? And then he shut himself up the next day. He's like, okay, I'm sorry. Yes, because we have these definitions, these outdated definitions of demographics. Because, like Katie said earlier, I think 20 minutes ago, we have a monetary system. And that's why the Hulus, the Netflix, the Amazons are reinventing the system. Which is like, I don't care if it's 18 to 49. I don't care if it's Latino, Martian, Asian. I'm going to make the show. I'm not going to make a pilot. I'm going to make a whole show. I'm going to put it on air. It's not going to be weekly. And they're reinventing the metrics. They're inventing what success looks like. And they're giving the opportunity, because they're not Tuesday night, they're every hour. They're giving these opportunities, these new voices to come. Because that's what that's what art is too. Art has a responsibility. I think that we have this great opportunity. The only thing that we have right now is this. It's like telling stories that bridge, telling stories that bridge through crying, telling stories that bridge through laughter. And again, if we have 33% of women, what I said, by age 35, they already had an abortion, and we only had your show and then our show, like, there's a big problem. And Shonda Rhimes making Olivia Pope as the wife of the president going to Planned Parenthood. We have a huge problem because let's at least represent reality.
No, the truth, reality is not represented.
It's all about that. It's about normalizing reality. It's not about like, hey, we need to have more Latino kids being positive. No, it's like, let's represent. Like, let's represent like California, 35% of the population in California is white. Let's go through the shows shot in California and let's see what's the percentage of characters that are white.
You mean you guys are much more represented in the population than
we are now the white population in California is, I think, is like 35 or 38%. 38%.
Only 38%. You're scaring the shit out of me. You mean I'm in the minority?
I gotta get a gun.
Hey, but wait a minute. You,
you mean you people of color are in the majority?
Katie, get on this side of the table.
I mean,
while they're getting... But wait a minute. When did the Jews move over to that side?
Yes!
I remember back in the day, you know, when I was raised up...
I'm the only white suburban male qualified to be on this side of the table. Which brings me... I was going to say... You know, having grown up in that environment and then going out into the world, moving to New York City, and you meet people, and so you experience different people, and you go, wow, the world's not so different. These people are not. And you start to experience, you can't help but change.
Yes.
And so this stuff that you're doing is bringing that back to where I came from, to these people, not in a way that's imposing anything. It's just, here's a story.
Yeah.
Here's a story. Our eyes are just a different color, but we live the same lives. We have the same reality. You know, realities are similar. Our experience is different. Come along and watch it.
Just another version of you.
And I think it's so important. And I think I love what you're saying about that changing, influencing how people vote, how people behave, you know, all of it.
Completely. And I think that New York is a great example. It's a Babel Tower that went well. It's New York City. It's like that opportunity and content is that melting pot because we have the ability of doing 12 hours.
You know, in New York City, there is the same separation as between the races and ideologies and everything else that exists in the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. Last year, I did I was the host of one episode of a show called America Divided.
Yep.
I was looking at housing. They had me, you know, I was just a reporter, and they had me looking at housing. And, I mean, this conversation, what we're talking about, the same divisions exist in New York City. So when you talked about, you don't want to hear about this part of the country as being so different from this part of the country, I forget exactly how you were phrasing it. It's true as people, wherever the hell we're living. You know, we need the conversation. I hope we have just been a little part of a conversation that brings us together as, you know, sharing that common humanity. And that sounds like, God, we didn't have the song that this man plays every
We've run out of time for the song.
Oh, there was a song? We had the Katie song.
We had Katie.
Without guitar, give them just a sense of it. We'll close with that.
We walk around from room to room. You bump into me, I bump into you. I sing a song, you dance a dance. We lay down romance. We drive the car down to the store. We buy some food. We need some more. We go to sleep. We dream the dream. And then I ask, what does it mean? What does it mean, this life, this night and day? And you say, go out and find a job. We got bills to pay, and life is good, and space and time. Give me some of yours. I'll give you some of mine.
I got goosebumps. That's beautiful. That's amazing.
Now, that is, in its way, an expression of our common humanity, because we all identify with that.
Mm. Yeah. Right.
We do that every day.
And I think it resumes the conversation we had here, because it's all about we pay bills the same way, we go to the bathroom the same way.
Everything the same.
Enjoy, we sleep. We need to get back to the basics.
Yeah.
And I think that we have a huge responsibility, and I'm very excited we're talking about that.
Sorry, Paul.
No, back to the basics. I think we need a revolution of this understanding.
This has been All of the Above with Norman Lear and his sidekick, Paul Hipp, and our guest, Dean Ernie Wilson.
Mauricio Mota.
It's the Mota I was forgetting. Mauricio Mota and his wife, Kathy Mota, who is bringing into the world a new Mota.
And
we have to make that world safe for that child.
Thank you guys for having us
yes,
here.
Thank you
for coming on.
It's an honor.
What does it mean, this life, this day and night?
So I'm Norman Lear, and you can find me, should you wish to hunt me down, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Norman Lear.
And you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Paul Hipp.
And life is good, and space and time, give me some of yours.